freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Football back. NFL football was back last night, Brock, and we'll get a whole lot more of it this weekend. The first full slate of games on Sunday. Seahawks in Denver to take on the Broncos, 125 start. And it's all here, man. It's all happening. You excited?
Let's go.
You're in Lincoln, Nebraska for it?
I sure am, buddy. I'm looking out at the satellite dishes, the farmland, the beauty of middle America, right where I find myself.
You're in the heartland.
Go Big Red. Go Big Red. One of my favorite places to, probably my favorite place, to be honest. You pinned me down, Salk, and said, you get to do a college football game anywhere other than Husky Stadium. Yeah. Where would you want to do it? I think it'd be this spot.
Really?
So, I think so. You know, you just got 95,000 people that love it, that absolutely love it, that want every part of it, every morsel of it. And in Scott Frost
considering
opener.
They haven't had a good team in like 20 years.
Yeah, it's been a little while. But Scott Frost opener tomorrow afternoon, so cool. It'll be an absolute blast.
Well, it was fun watching NFL football last night. I mean, you know, it was Thursday night football, so even if they don't play the week before, they still can't play good games. Although it ended up materializing late and being great and seeing what happens at the end. I thought Sark really coached a good game as the offensive coordinator. I mean, he's really gone on to great things since being here in Washington. I couldn't be happier for Steve Sarkisian. Great win for his Atlanta Falcons. He was the hero for his play calling and the way he utilized his running back. Oh, wait, none of that happened. My bad. Sark's awful. He's a terrible play caller. He's really, really bad. And it was really hard to watch that team play last night. Yeah. And Matt Ryan has somehow gotten battles. Like, it was really confusing to watch.
Yeah, that wasn't the prettiest picture. They showed Goodell late in the game up in the booth or up in his little suite that he was sitting in. And I'm sure he's looking at that product going, it's got to be better than this.
Yep.
Right? I mean, these are Super Bowl contending teams, Super Bowl champ. And, Matt Ryan's a top 10 quarterback in this league, and they're super stars all over the place, and this product has got to look better than this, but it's just not. And I think a reminder,
the defense was pretty good last night.
Oh, absolutely.
Both defenses played pretty well. That's the underrated part about Atlanta, is that, you know, they get the credit, you know, the pipe for being this big, high-powered offense, but I think there might be a better defensive team.
Yeah, I don't want to be one of the 100,000, and I was watching Steve Young after the game with Scott Van Pelt, and he's just like, you know, I've said this 1,000 times, but I'm sorry. With this CBA and the inability to practice, the defenses are always going to be ahead. Mm-hmm. And as big and fast, as athletic as all those guys are in this league right now, especially early in the year before they get banged up and hurt, and they're just flying around, it's brutal.
Yeah.
It's really hard to have any continuity in any pretty offense, and he certainly didn't see that
Philadelphia
last night.
Was somehow able to work out the Philly, their new version of the Philly special, which they ran last night. That was pretty fun. All right, Seahawks will play on Sunday, Brock, in Denver. I think the Seahawks are going to be pretty good this year. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs or not. I kind of have them somewhere in the 8 to 10 win range, and I know that's a wide range, but it depends, obviously, on a lot of things, injuries, etc. And as positive as I am about them, I don't have like an overwhelming sense of confidence about going to Denver for the opener.
Right.
There's like five or six things that kind of conspire together that give me a sense of dread. The altitude, the pass rush of the Broncos, the heat, Keenum's style. I mean, he's always been good against them, kind of safely picking and choosing what he wants to do, not looking for too many big plays.
Yep.
The injuries already with another cornerback down and Fluker and Ifedi potentially. And then Earl coming back and the distraction around it. They're just all those things kind of wrap up together to make me a little nervous about this game. But I think that there's a pretty clear path to success as well. And it would require a great running game, great defense in the red zone specifically, bending but not breaking.
Yep.
And then winning the special teams battle. Like they need to be a difference maker in special teams. If you do all of those things, you get the game to the fourth quarter, the last few minutes, and let Russ do his thing.
Yeah, I could not agree with any of that more. I think in every single way, you and I probably feel very, very similarly. And it's probably from sitting out there together at the picnic table or actually our little studio booth there for the last month or so, watching this team, watching the history of it, Mike, watching it all unfold. We'll get to the story a little bit later today that also came out. We'll dig into some of that. But I could not disagree with one point you made. The only thing I would say is all of those factors, the defense flying around and hopefully limiting the big play, and I think they're going to be extra guarded in that way. Russ having to trust the people around him. You know, I really believe Mike Solari is going to find, and Schottenheimer are going to find more run game. You saw that again last night. You know, that's why Philadelphia won the game. They got in the red zone. They ran the ball for a couple touchdowns. The only reason, in my opinion, they won that game. So I think in all those ways, you're right. And then ultimately, number three is going to have the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter to go win this game. And I think we're going to say that week after week after week. I don't think there's many games that the Seahawks are going to blow people out. And I don't think there's going to be too many where they're just blown out like they were a year ago against the Rams. I think when you're young and hungry and fast and the way they built this thing, there will be ample opportunities week after week after week for number three to deliver in the fourth quarter.
Well, we saw it even last night. I mean, you know, what did that game come down to? It was poorly played for most of it. And at the end, you know, Foles made a couple of plays to help them get down into the red zone, then a nice touchdown in the running game.
Yep.
And Ryan drove the team down the field, couldn't put it in the end zone. I mean, it feels like so many of these NFL games, you play 53 minutes to figure out what's going to happen in the last seven or so.
Yes, like an NBA season.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of similarity there. usually the first 53 minutes is more entertaining.
And matter a little bit more.
Yeah, a little bit, and there's injuries and this, that, and the other. And you're all
so your confidence factor, what is it?
In the game or the season?
Yeah. Are we going to find ourselves on Fridays for the first time in 7 years where you're not picking the Seahawks to win every week?
Yeah, I said that.
I think you picked the Seahawks to win every game for the last 6 years on Friday.
Well, four anyway. I'm not going to do that this year. I said that a couple months ago. I don't think that they're in that spot where I expect them to win every single game. But I still think they're a really good team, if that makes sense. Like in the last 4 or 5 years, I knew that they weren't going to go 16-0, but every game I thought they would win.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think I'm willing to kind of look at more of the matchup and say, okay, this one's a tough one for them. I like them better next week in Chicago than I do this week in Denver. I think it's an easier place to play. A few of the factors aren't working against them the way they are this week. I have some concerns about this week in particular.
Yep.
But there's still a pretty easy, you know, a simple path to success for them.
Yes. I would agree with that. That number is still just shocking to me. I have it on my paper right here in front of me that this century, the Broncos are 17-1 in their home openers. And that is with some good players. That's with some bad players. That is speaking, I think, to that environment, some of those factors that you bring up, some of the heat, some of the altitude, everything you deal with, a tremendous fan base. You know, I think of all the arenas in the NFL that I played in, that was there, Kansas City. Man, the AFC West used to just rock with the kingdom, too. That is one of the toughest places to go in and play, and I think that record indicative of it. So they're going to need, you know, all hands on deck. It is rather telling that yesterday Denver, I think now for back-to-back days, Salk, has practiced everybody, full participant, all 53, and the Seahawks week number one, not quite in that boat. Dante Johnson, a non-participant at corner with a hip injury yesterday.
Hold on. You can't say that. Literally 95% of our audience does not know who that is.
The presumed
you
starting
can't just say
corner.
Dante Johnson's not playing like it's a big deal when most people don't know who that is.
The presumed starting corner opposite of Shaquille Griffin.
You don't know the Texans?
Dante Johnson?
Yeah. Isn't he?
Yeah, he's a Texans linebacker.
Well, he was a silver medalist, 200-meter runner.
Now he's supposed to be the starter, right cornerback, opposite Shaquille Griffin. And, you know, that may not happen.
And that flared up yesterday. Jaron Reed's knee flared up a little bit. We got limited participation from Effetti and a few of those pieces. So, yeah, if this game's won or lost on the injury sheet on Thursday, the Broncos have a clear advantage. It's not. It's going to be won or lost in the fourth quarter in the final 15 minutes. And going to be won or lost, I think, on the shoulders of number three.
Can they hit hard enough? Is this team going to go out and thump?
That's probably one of my biggest concerns, Mike, over the course of this season. I know Bobby will. I think he's going to be the centerpiece of a lot of that. I think it won't be for lack of effort with Shaquem and Bradley McDougald and Barkevious Mingo and all the rest of them, but none of them have the kind of thump and the girth and just the power that some of their predecessors had in this amazing run. They're going to have to do it with all hands on deck. They're going to have to do it, I think, rotating and playing some people. They're going to have to do it with some real pleasant surprises defensively, and that may be Bradley and Tedrick and Barkevious playing some of the best football that they played in their careers and getting the opportunity to do so.
We'll see, man. I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm just excited to see this thing, and probably more than anything, to see Russell Wilson for a full 60 minutes instead of for like a quarter or two in a half-cocked offense. I'm ready to see Russell Wilson go out there and do his thing, and I know we're going to spend a lot of time talking about him here based on this Sports Illustrated article. You can go read it at SI.com, or we tweeted it out at the Mike Salk. It's another hit piece. It comes from a central point in Santa Clara, California, where the mouth of Cali, Richard Sherman, has been running an anonymous endlessly again. But we'll talk more about it at 7:30. I'm not sure there's anything groundbreaking in there, yep. but I'm excited to discuss. It's Brock and Salk, and it's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
All right, first thing you got to know is that the Seahawks and Broncos will kick off each of their 2018 seasons on Sunday afternoon, 1:25 game in Denver. And of course, you can hear the game here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hawks have been ready for this, and it is a completely different looking team than what we've seen in the past, with a whole lot of Pro Bowlers jettisoned and a whole lot of younger players in to take their place. The Seahawks aim to take the power back, as we said often this offseason, and turns out that feeling was echoed by some of the ex-players. There's a Sports Illustrated story out this morning. Contains a scathing portrayal that Pete Carroll's special treatment of Russell Wilson led to the collapse of the potential Seahawks dynasty that some of the players began referring to as the Titanic last year. That's nice of them. Greg Bishop is one of the co-authors of it. He will join us this morning at 8.
You said there's nothing groundbreaking. I mean, Marshawn downed an entire cognac bottle in the locker room post-Super Bowl 2014.
That's true. That was pretty good.
I thought that was a pretty good detail. And where Richard got married, I think a pretty good detail. So we'll get to some of that in 20 minutes here. This is going to be, much like the preseason for the Seattle Seahawks, I think a season of discovery. A season where a lot of inexperienced players are going to get the opportunity of a lifetime. We get to discover just how great number three is, because there's going to be a lot more on his shoulders. And, you know, thankfully for Russell, there's actually going to be a competent offensive line, a run game that will be featured with some pretty, I think, elite talent, and the opportunity to take shots down the field. This is going to be a four-quarter game in Denver. Seahawks are not going to run away from anybody, especially out on the road. They're going to have to win in the final 15 minutes, seemingly like every NFL game, and they'll have to do it with the right arm of Russell Wilson.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Huskies will have their home opener tomorrow. They take on North Dakota at 2 o'clock in the, we said, 2018 home opener. Game is on the Pac-12 network, and it's going to be a doozy, Brock. Anytime these two teams get together, you can throw out the record books. North Dakota, one of the all-time powerhouses in college football, and I just hope the Huskies can hang on for a win.
I think this is a get-right game in just about every way, with multiple opportunities for everybody. For Jake Browning to play in front of his home crowd and hopefully find a little bit of rhythm early. To actually score touchdowns and produce down in the red zone. May get even a little bit cheer during some of the action, I think, on Saturday. And you know what? For the Huskies in the Pac-12 Conference in home games to feel better about themselves. The Cougs, they take on the Hoh. That would be San Jose State. Spartans come up, one of the worst teams in college football, Division I at least, college football. So both, I think, local teams, an opportunity to get healthy this weekend.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, finally, the WNBA Finals begin tonight at Key Arenas. The Storm hosts the Washington Mystics, a best-of-five-game series. Game two will be in Seattle on Sunday, so two games this weekend for the Storm. Go Storm. Meantime, the Yankees are in town, bringing their particularly obnoxious group of fans and players to Seattle and Safeco Field. So hopefully you'll go out there and be mean to them.
Yeah, you know, color me a little bit disappointed here that the WNBA Finals are on ESPN News. On ESPN News, some of the greatest stars and greatest players in women's basketball don't find themselves on the main network or even ESPN2, but on ESPN News. But one cool little story or aside to that is you can watch a game here locally on Joe TV. And I like that move that ESPN at least made for the local markets in Washington and in Seattle. They allowed one of their partners or a sister station there locally to broadcast. So you can watch Breanna Stewart and Sue Bird and all the gals there with the Storm go after their third title. For Sue, it would be her third. For Jewel and Breanna, obviously their first, as they're playing it first time in 8 years.
All right, those are three things you need to know every single morning at 7:10. I'll say this, Brock. I'd rather be on ESPN News than the Pac-12 network.
That's probably fair, yeah.
Definitely fair. That's a fact.
I get ESPN News. I don't get the Pac-12 network.
I don't know if I've seen truck racing on the... No, that was FS2 or FS1.
Yeah, I mean, I get ESPN News. That seems like a better place to play than the Pac-12 network. Yeah. Ryan Rucco's pretty good play-by-play guy.
I mean, Rebecca Lobo alongside.
And I don't want to take shots at the play-by-play guys at Pac-12 network, because some of them are actually really good. But, you know, that's a pretty decent production I was watching the other night on ESPN News.
True. Go Storm.
Guess the Storm are doing better than the Pac-12 right now. Come on, guys. Let's get it together. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, well, the NFL debuted last night. What did you think?
It's pretty ugly. I mean, it's great to have it back. It's great to have a close game. 26 penalties, I think a little bit too much. Steve Sarkisian continues to struggle with his red zone play calling. Cost him probably a game because they just can't get anything in the red zone. They just don't run the ball into red zone. Nick Foles wasn't pretty, but at the right time, he got the last drive to be able to win the football game.
What do Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and Mike Zunino have in common?
On-base percentage is very low.
Pretty close,
batting
yes.
average down
about
below 200.
For 20. For 20, that's where Matt and Julio are in the red zone over the last two seasons. Sheesh. I think that's what Zunino is in his last 20 at-bats, at least, if you extrapolate some of those numbers out. What I mean, is the heat on, Sark? Is the heat on Dan Quinn? Is the heat on, you know, Matt Ryan in that market?
Not as much on Matt Ryan. I think certainly it's going to be on Sark because he's now year two and it just doesn't get any better. And you can see there's deficiencies in the play calling in the red zone. I mean, you know, how many times have you seen Matt Ryan just drop back and, you know, and again, it's like he knows he run the play and he's not even looking over at Julio Jones. I know they tried to throw to him about three times during the game. It didn't work, but you've got to try to. Mm. You know, that's where the running of the football. And really, when you've got two talented backs like that, Tevin Coleman is a very good backup, and Devontae Freeman's one of the better backs in the league, and you just don't run the football or establish the run. It's like, when do you get it? And right now, Sark doesn't get it.
To be fair, though, I'm all for making fun of Sark. I mean, this is a man who picked his nose and ate it on national television. But at the same time, Matt Ryan looked awful. Like, where did his arm strength go?
Well, I mean, he still got the ball, 10 times over to Julio Jones? I mean, I don't have any problem with Matt Ryan. I mean, he threw for 251 yards. Yeah, it was a little less. But I think we're also seeing, we'll see this carries through the entire weekend, the byproduct of not being out there much in the preseason. Yep. I think this is now maybe one of the trends. I know some of the coaches are saying that, you know, this first game, Bill Parcells said it probably the best, this first week of the preseason, maybe the first couple weeks, is almost like week two or week three of the preseason because you're not in sync. Clearly, neither side was in sync. Nick Foles isn't as talented as Matt Ryan, but offensively, it was pretty ugly.
Hey, JC, if we rolled out the injury report list from yesterday between these two teams, Denver, who had zero, and Seattle, who had a plethora, I don't think the Seahawks end up winning. Should I be concerned with what I saw in the injury report?
Yeah, I'm very concerned, yeah. Because, I mean, the one thing is, I still think, you know, Seattle is maybe slightly a better team, but when you start picking away starters like that, they're not deep. And so that's where I think the big concern, because, you know, if Dante Johnson's not going to be able to play. We already know KJ Wright's not going to be able to play. I mean, here's DJ Fluker now 2 weeks out with a hamstring injury, so it looks like he's unlikely to go. And J.R. Sweezy has had very little time on the field. I mean, this is where I think the problems come in and give you a lot of concern. So I don't know what that number is for injuries, but when you start to take away, you know, two or three starters now from a team that has lost so many starters, that's very concerning.
So obviously KJ is out, but everybody else you referenced, Jaron Reed is on that list. Deion Jordan's still eliminated. A participant, who's the most important one? Knowing that KJ is not going to play, not going to make this trip, of all the injuries that you're seeing there, Fluker, Dante, Jaron, Deion, who's the most important one they just simply have to have come Sunday?
I have to say it's Dante Johnson. You know, I would say it would be, I think in the big picture, it would be Deion Jordan, but having missed as much time as they have, how many plays do you think he could go anyways? I mean, if it's just on a pure pass rush basis, if it's just pure on that, I'd say it'd be Deion Jordan. But if he plays, I mean, what do you expect? 10, 15 plays with the limited time he's been out there. If this was a healthy Deion Jordan that was able to do a lot, I would put him in the number one spot. I mean, at least with Fluker, I mean, it's a guard position. You know, Sweezy is tough and all that. I mean, he should be able to fill in. Again, you wonder about his conditioning because he hasn't been out there a lot. But these are concerning injuries.
John, have you read the SI piece that came out this morning yet?
I did not.
All right. Well, it's out. Big surprise. Everyone is shocked that there's some anonymous former players that are taking shots at Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. Can you believe it?
Oh, surprising.
Really, it's bizarre. Yeah. It's almost like I can feel and hear the sound emanating from Santa Clara. But
is this kind of like the Bob Woodward book and all that stuff?
I don't know.
Or is this like the person that did the New York
Times?
Yeah,
this is an op-ed. Anonymous op-ed from inside this the ex-Seahawks, though. In any event, it's a bunch of interesting things in here. And the overall claim, essentially, is that special treatment of Russell Wilson led to the undoing of this team. Do you believe that's true?
I believe people that gave the story believe it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, name me a quarterback that doesn't get special treatment. I mean, I still remember Brock's story about being with Peyton Manning. Do you think Peyton Manning got some special treatment?
Yeah, John, he got some special treatment.
Name me a quarterback that doesn't. Name me a top quarterback that doesn't get special treatment. I mean, that's. I mean, you know, players can be treated differently, but quarterbacks have to be treated differently too. They have so much on their shoulders, and so I mean, is what would be the complaint that they're making? Because again, I haven't got my SI yet. That special treatment in what negative way?
Just the very nature of the culture, John, is one built on competition. That it was dog eat dog for everybody, and then for Russell, that Pete just protected him. That you just can't have this culture of competition and then protect, you know, your teacher's pet the way that he did Russell, and that's why guys tuned out over the last few years.
That's, I mean, again, that's their fault, I would have to think, because think about this. If the team itself has a minus 44 through three quarters of play last year and a plus 78 thanks to Russell Wilson and what he's able to do with the offense, best in the league, is that, do you think you want special treatment for somebody like that when he has the ability to win the games at the end?
Yeah, of course you want special treatment for that. Like, it's so funny that some of the irritation that you get from the players in this is they're whatever. We're going to talk about it more in a few minutes. I don't want to go into too big a detail, but one of the little interesting pieces in there was that Michael Bennett sure seemed to be the one guy who has departed that was almost standing up for Russell in that. Does that surprise you at all?
A little bit, yeah. Because, I mean, what you wonder is that, okay, because of the way that they kind of, you know, picked a few players out that aren't going to be with the team, and he was one, that you would think that he would be the one that would be out there. But, you know, I know he never criticized him publicly.
No.
That's one thing in a press conference last year or in any other year.
Really the opposite. I mean, he was kind of one of those guys who always found a way to get Russell's back. So it's interesting to see the way some of that split occurred. We got a little wild card for you.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton,
yes.
It's time for Fan Fiction Friday.
Yo, boy.
In this psycho thriller, John Clayton is a janitor in the largest technology company in the world who gets fired for no reason. It isn't until he meets a shady figure in a nightclub played by Boy Howdy that he uncovers the company believes Clayton saw the company's secret plans to brainwash the public with their new technology. Watch as Clayton takes on the company's CEO, played by Woody Harrelson, in a wrongful termination lawsuit that turns deadly, and see if Clayton can do his best Mission Impossible impression and stop the company from brainwashing the public. What do you think?
What a hero I can be as being a janitor and being able to save the world from Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
I mean, what a great honor that's going to be. You know, working hand in hand with Boy Howdy to beat down Woody Harrelson with the secrets of how he's going to try it. But again, what a spot for a janitor. I mean, I feel honored that I have the ability to save the world and, you know, knock down this terrible company. You know, it's like I was taking out the trash one day and now I'm going to trash the company.
You're cleaning up the company.
Look at you,
one
baby.
More time.
Do you close your eyes as Boy Howdy's unwinding his Fan Fiction Fridays and try to picture it or imagine, or do you just take copious notes? How do you handle those scripts?
Normally, I have my hand in my head just trying to press down, try to endure as much pain as I can.
A couple of text messages coming in, John.
Yeah.
No one's treating Nathan Peterman special. How come?
Because he's not any good.
Oh, right. And another text says, no, those guys should just be mad at themselves for not being quarterbacks.
There you go.
All right, John, have a good day. Your show's coming up at 10 o'clock this morning, getting ready for the Seahawks and Broncos. And then, of course, you'll hear John at 4 with Danny, Dave, and Moore, as you always do. All right, Brock, you want to discuss this thing?
Sure.
We'll give you some of the key. I'm sure most people haven't had a chance to read this yet. It is up at SI.com. If you would like to read it, you can find it on my Twitter page at the Mike Salk on Twitter. So try and read it, skim through it here in the next couple of minutes. We'll give you the very basics, the key takeaways, and what it means moving forward, as the anonymous sources from Santa Clara have a lot to say this morning. It's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, Seahawks going to be playing their first game on Sunday. You can listen to it here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 125 start. But, Brock, we wondered when it would come, and it turns out that day was today. SI.com and Monday Morning Quarterback Greg Bishop and Robert Klemko co-bylining a story entitled The Dynasty That Never Was Inside the Unraveling of the Seattle Seahawks. The story begins If you haven't had a chance to read it yet, it's long. It begins at Richard Sherman's wedding at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, right after the wedding on a happy night for Richard Sherman, when the players weren't just simply toasting his nuptials. Some were also saluting his escape to San Francisco, away from the Seattle organization a handful of players had referred to in private as the Titanic for a better part of a year. They were described it as the dynasty that never was and talked about some players' lingering disdain for quarterback Russell Wilson.
Ooh. Escape from Alcatraz to San Francisco and Richard Sherman from his wedding, but yet never on the record.
A dozen sources with direct knowledge of the Seahawks' internal dynamics contended that the locker room had fractured last season, with private spats spilling into public view and a rift deepening between those who supported Wilson and those who felt the coaches held him to a different standard. It was the management in Seattle deciding to take the power back this offseason, according to two departed Seahawks, with that notion confirmed by three other current or former players.
Hey, didn't we play that song?
We did. Quite a few times.
Hold on a second. Didn't we play that song on our show?
That's reading a little of it. Let me give you the key takeaway so that we don't have to read the whole thing and take up all morning.
I'll tell you what, man. You read beautifully.
Thank you, Rob.
I think I would listen to you for 2.5 hours here from Lincoln, Nebraska. Just simply read it.
Anybody out there from Audible.com or one of the big books on tape companies want to, you know, throw a little cash my way to read stories?
Yep.
Hey, you got my address. You know where
the
I'm
kid
at.
Kid read Let's Ezra go. Pound years ago. Now he's reading Craig Bishop and Klemko.
All right, here you go. Here's the key takeaways. The players believe, Brock, that special treatment of Russell Wilson led to an undoing of their dynasty. Players believed Russ couldn't handle competition, yet, of course, for whatever reason, Pete chose Russell over all those players. Players believe that Russell Wilson essentially is a narc for management. Players believe that Michael Bennett, well, at least my takeaway is that Michael Bennett stood up for Russell. That's not what players believe. Players believe and are furious about personnel decisions that weren't based on competition. They pointed specifically to the team letting such stalwarts go as Tony McDaniel, Malcolm Smith, and Kason Williams. They also believe that the Super Bowl decision was about Russell Wilson becoming the MVP. Oh, Marshawn apparently was afterwards in the locker room after chugging his bottle of cognac, saying that he was robbed by the team. They also pointed at Jermaine Effetti as being a player who stood for the lack of competition.
Yes.
Those would be the big takeaways from the players.
Yes, I think all of that is very fair. I don't know if any of that is particularly new. This feels like Seth Wickersham's piece from a couple years ago, rebooted and retooled, right, with what happened last year, and now with the actual departure of so many of these guys. And it feels unbelievably petty. If Wickersham's piece felt just, to me, kind of fragmented and fractured, and I think spoke to some of the harsh realities that were the end of that Super Bowl and how painful that was for Mike Salk and for Boy Howdy and for Lydia and Kyle and me and you know, the hundreds of thousands of Seahawks fans, let alone all the people there, you know, that one I thought spoke more to that emotion and juice. This just feels so darn petty to me. So petty from a bunch of guys, and I think a few that still may be on that team, not many, and a lot of them that are out of the league, and one in particular that sits down there in Santa Clara that is a cornerback and as a defense just wanted all of the praise and all of the attention and didn't want to share one lick of it with a guy that is wired and built totally different than all of them. So it just felt, man, did that ooze with pettiness this morning as I read that from my toilet in Lincoln, Nebraska.
It really is surprising that Russell and Sherm weren't able to get along long-term, go figure. In the meantime, Brock, I'll ask a few questions and I'll read a few of the text messages that have come in. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. I like a few of these. Good Lord, Sherman had it so bad. I'm sure Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers' teams think they get special treatment as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I'm pretty sure the passengers didn't sink the Titanic. That's the text of the day already.
Wow.
No one comes close. That's fantastic.
Wow.
All right, let me ask you a couple quick questions based on all this.
That's great.
That's really funny. Does Pete still have a firm grip on this team?
On this team right now? Yeah, he's got a much firmer grip on this team and this group of men than he obviously had the last few years, with a bunch of them that had a whole lot of power, a whole lot of money, a whole lot of history, and weren't buying in. This group, he's got a very firm grasp on.
Have they taken the power back?
If that was the
call of the off season, Brock,
yes.
The
we gotta take the power
all-important job of the Seahawks management this offseason. To take the power back.
Yeah.
Come on! Did they succeed?
You know, that's good. No, you can play that too. You just read that piece with that underneath you, man.
Come on. Did they succeed?
Yeah, that was their goal. That's what they did. Yes, they cleaned house, man. They went young. They went with the draft class. They went with a lot of people that they can mold and shape. And a lot of the hubris of the individual empowerment, which was awesome when it was rolling, went out the door and went out the other side.
How does this affect your decision on Earl? Brock? Hello. All right. I'll ask everybody then. How does this affect your decision on Earl? Because if the argument is that you're Brock, are you there, buddy?
The power back and I ripped out my headphones. Dude, I was so excited.
It sounds like you have a really creaky chair.
What are you doing?
I'm so. Don't make me do that again.
No,
don't
stop do banging don't do your it. Head in the studio.
So I got those nice headphones on that you gave me, Salt. Right. And it's got like a little piece that connects into the headphone. And I was, I guess I was too vicious and violent. And I ripped that sucker out, but right. put it back in. I'm good to go.
Sorry, how does this affect your decision on Earl?
How does this affect my decision on Earl? Not one single bit, because really? I don't think Earl was involved in any of this. Earl is spinning like a Tasmanian devil in the corner. Earl is not quoted in this article. Earl is not a worry to me. Earl's on a one-year deal. I think that was going to be the deal from the very beginning.
Text continue to come in, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. I can't believe they mentioned Kaysen Williams. He's been cut by two other teams.
He got cut by the 0-16 Browns.
But God forbid they didn't choose Kaysen Williams.
It hasn't worked.
Malcolm Smith, that guy was Super Bowl MVP. I mean, come on, Sherm. Like, you got to keep that guy around forever, right? Sheesh. And Tony McDaniel, I mean, you can't find another Tony McDaniel. That guy did the dirty work.
Yeah.
You should pay him an exorbitant amount of money to stick around and do that. Rob Stattenbrock, you know who that is? He's
yes.
a guy in Britain who does really into the Seahawks. Really
yeah, he does a great job.
Guy. He does. He tweeted back to me this morning and said, I really wish someone somewhere within the Seahawks would fight back here. The Super Bowl didn't have to be the beginning of the end. It became the end because of garbage like this.
Yeah.
Should the team, by which I think I mean John Schneider, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, should the team fire back at this?
At this? No. Not now.
I agree with you.
Not now. I think during the time, and I think there was some criticism that I would have thrown Pete's way, and I think I did a year ago, Mike, or 2 years ago, when that Wickersham piece came out, right? They're kind of like a parent with an undisciplined child that you empower, and it's great, and it's wonderful until, you know what, they cut your knees off. You know, you've got to come back and have some form of discipline. I mean, that's the beauty here with Richard and these guys. Like, oh, you know, he didn't hold them accountable. He didn't hold you accountable, Richard. When you threw him and the coordinator and everybody under the bus, did he publicly ever lash out at you? Did he ever fine you? Did he ever suspend you for being the only rule breaker of the only rule that's important, which is protect the team? I mean, he never treated any of those guys in a way that was harsh, right? Or am I mistaken there?
No, I tend to agree. And Brock, I think it goes almost even further than that. We got a great text here earlier that said special treatment. What about the special? How come they're not complaining about the special treatment Marshawn got?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, Marshawn doesn't want to practice. Marshawn doesn't want to be part of the competitive environment. No big deal.
Yep.
No big deal.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It didn't infuriate me, to be honest with you. I think I'm somewhat numb to this. I think, unfortunately, like my old father-in-law, Larry Hills, he's not old, but the saying is old, and that is life's about trade-offs. The trade-off of everything that Pete's culture was built on with those guys and keeping them all around for so much longer than anybody else in the league, the trade-off was that they were going to build their hubris. When you individually empowered them the way that you did, they thought they knew everything. And Richard obviously still does. Richard thought he should have made the personnel decisions. Richard thought that no one should wear 24 again, and Doug thought that. And Richard thought, you know, this is the move that you need to be made. And Richard thought this is the way you need to treat a quarterback. And Richard and Doug and a bunch of them, this is the way you need to run this program now. And I'm sorry, you were the player. They were the coach. It was your program, and unfortunately it did. I will agree with Greg Bishop and Klemko on one thing. It did erode from the inside out. It wasn't the factors on the outside that took this thing down. This thing eroded from the inside out with a bunch of the principal characters.
All right, we'll talk to Greg Bishop, who co-wrote this with Robert Klimko, coming up here in 20 minutes at 8 o'clock. We'll chat with him. Looking forward to it. As always, Greg's one of our favorite, and it's an interesting article, whether you believe the all of the accusations or not, or sort of the conclusion that many of these players have drawn. We'll talk to Greg about this. You can get a chance to read it. It is up at SI.com. Before we do any of it, though, Brock, I need your expertise. Time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42. Who do you expect to break out tomorrow for UW, and who's going to lead the Seahawks in rushing yards on Sunday? Those questions and more next on Brock and Salk.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, Greg Bishop going to join us coming up here in about 15 minutes to discuss this big article, The Dynasty That Never Was, Inside the Unraveling of the Seattle Seahawks. It's interesting. It did unravel in many ways, and yet I feel like they got a pretty good chance to re-ravel it this year. Is that the word?
Whoa.
If you can unravel, can you just ravel or re-ravel? I don't know.
I'm not touching that thing.
Probably not. Let's just get to three good football questions, something we are experts in, or at least you are. Brock, your biggest takeaway from the opening night game last night in the NFL, Atlanta loses despite coming down the field at the end of the game with a shot to win. What'd you see?
Besides the obvious, and that's Atlanta's 15 penalties, and defense is dominating, and what we talked about to start the show, how get ready for the narrative nationally to be, man, no practice time. No continuity, bad product, just like it has been the last couple years in the CBA. I'm gonna go a step further and just football wise. One thing that just jumped out to me, and it did in my game last week that we called the game with Chip Kelly, Mike. And if there's ever a production meeting that you would have loved over my years of doing those production meetings with coaches, excuse me, coaches meetings, not production meetings, that you would have loved, it would have been last week with Chip Kelly. You would have absolutely loved the football. Bob Wischusen was awake, and he was tuned in, and he loved it. And as Chip Kelly was talking about the differences of the college and pro game and what he learned, and so much of it jumped out last night, and in particular about the importance of explosives. Chip is like, in the NFL, it's so hard. Everybody is good. Everybody is fast. There's very few matchups. They morph all the time. It's really hard to find any success and execute. And he said, here's the bottom line. In all these years, like 20 years of studies, that if you don't have an explosive play on a drive, and that would be a 12-yard run or a 16-yard pass, you have a 9% chance of scoring. And if you have one, those odds jump to nearly 50%, 49%. And you saw that last night when there was an explosive run, when there was the new Philly special, when there was a play that got out, when there was a chunk play down the field to Julio Jones. Guess what happened? They drove down and they scored at least a field goal or a touchdown. So as I watched that game and as I watched the NFL kind of through that lens now, and I'd encourage some of you too as well as you follow along. And Lydia, you love to chart baseball. Go ahead and chart that over the course of some of this season. When the Seahawks have an explosive play, a 12-yard run, a 16-yard pass, there's nearly a 50% chance that they're going to at least score a field goal, and especially with Seabass kicking 50-plus. So finding those explosive plays, really hard to do with fast defenses last night. But when they did, both teams found just enough points to score.
All right, question number two. UW with a tough one tomorrow. I just hope they can figure out a way, good game plan to beat North Dakota, Brock. Who do you expect to break out for them besides everybody?
Yeah, the greatest runner in the history of the University of Washington's program. He eclipsed Napoleon Kaufman last week against Auburn. And this guy is going to have a lot more fun running through a lot bigger lanes tomorrow.
Gaskin up the middle, got the first down, and Moore streaking to the 50. He's to the 40, down the right seam, 20, 10, 5, touchdown Huskies. 69 yards for Miles Gaskin.
I actually thought the front did a pretty decent job against the front seven of Auburn at times. You know, you're not going to blow those guys off the ball, much like with NFL D linemen, you're not going to do it. But they got a hat on a hat, and the problem then was the safeties and the corners and everybody else that could run 4-4 and fly the way they do down there in the SEC and at Auburn in particular with that group. That's not going to be the case with North Dakota. They're going to get a hat on a hat. Miles is going to make one guy miss, and I would expect a couple of those 50-plus runs tomorrow in an awfully big day for Miles Gaskin and possibly Savon Ahmed right next to him.
All right, question number three. Speaking of running the football, football, Brock. It's going to be crucial for the Seahawks on Sunday. Who leads them in rushing yards?
Yeah, Chris Carson's going to lead them in rushing yards. I think Chris Carson's going to have a terrific game. I think Chris Carson's going to have every opportunity to get to 100 yards come Sunday afternoon in Denver, because as he showed in the preseason, he can get the yards even when the play is not perfectly blocked.
Russell from the shotgun, hands off inside. Carson, he goes in! Touchdown, Seahawks! Chris Carson almost not touched.
Or when it is perfectly blocked, as it was on that inside little trap play in the preseason a couple of times. The toss sweep to me down in L.A. that ultimately gets called back on that opening drive, you know, of that series against the number ones of the Chargers down there. I expect Chris Carson to have an excellent start to this season. I don't know if he can stay healthy. If I was a fantasy football guy, he would scare me to death. Many of these running backs would, because they've just not shown, unfortunately, that they can do it over a 16-week season. But week number one, I think you get Chris Carson at his very best. I expect him to have a good day in the Mile High City.
There you go. That's three football questions with Brock. We call Coors Light's Blue 42, and we do it every single day at 7:45. Mariners, of course, will get back after it tonight, Brock, after a night off. They play the Yankees at 7:10. Pregame show will be at 6 here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And then Sunday will be game day for the Seahawks, 10 o'clock pregame show. Game gets underway at 1:25. So really busy weekend between both those series, that game. You got the Huskies tomorrow. You got the Storm tonight and Sunday. Games 1 and 2 of the WNBA Finals. As I said, I'm now kind of hooked. Like I'm now planning to watch this tonight. I said I hadn't watched them before the other night.
I love you.
I'm now in, man. I have it on my calendar. Things to do tonight. Watch the Storm.
Hey, every dollar in my wallet, if you can get this right, this question. Every dollar right now in my wallet, I'll send it FedEx here from Lincoln, Nebraska, your way. What is the mascot of North Dakota? Their football team that comes into town. They are the North Dakota what?
They're no longer the Fighting Sioux.
They're the, but they're still fighting. Fighting Hawks.
Lydia.
I was trying to act it out for you. I thought you got it.
I was trying to delay to make it seem like you were giving me the answer.
Dang it! I'm sorry.
I was trying to delay.
I'm just going to go home. I ruined the whole thing. Someone take over for me.
Yeah, sure. You got 800.
But they're the Fighting Sioux, and that's what all their fans call them. And
I thought they were the Jackrabbits.
South Dakota State.
Mm-hmm.
Directional University.
North Dakota State Bison.
Directional University.
Bison. With a Z.
Who's the Bison?
North Dakota
Carson
State.
Carson Wentz's crew.
Okay. Yeah. Where did Adam Vinatieri go?
To college.
Well, to one of those schools, though, right? Didn't he go to one of the Dakotas? You're supposed to remember the difference between these things. They're not good. They're coming here to be sacrificial lambs. That's what they should be called.
He went to South Dakota State.
There you go. The North Dakota sacrificial lambs will show up at Montlake tomorrow.
And he went to Rapid City Central High School.
Big deal. Rapid City? Really, really good high school. And they got one of the best programs in the country. All right, Greg Bishop's going to join us next to talk about the decline and fall of the Seahawks Empire. It's next on Brock and Salk.